We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Blue Wire.
Breaking news, Terry Rozier. He'll be the next starting point guard of the Charlotte Hornets.
Step back, wide open, and it's good! Terry Rozier!
All right, what's up, everyone, and welcome in to another BuzzBeat, your favorite Charlotte Hornets podcast. You can follow us at BuzzBeatPod on Twitter and find our episodes on Apple Podcast and Spotify. This is Richie, and I'll be joined by Spencer today. Spencer, Happy New Year. How is everything going? I'm assuming work has died down a little bit for you. I know you said it was pretty busy towards the end of the calendar year.
Yeah, Happy New Year. It has died down a little bit. You know, it's always, every single year, you know, you get 2 weeks off for Christmas, because I've worked at a school like you, Richie, ever since I graduated college. I'm on the admin side, you're on the teaching side, but you always get this long break, and I have an awful time getting back into, like, the swing of work and the schedule. Like, I'm not good with change. So yesterday was rough, because I took actually last Thursday and Friday off just to kind of complete the Christmas break. And then, so yesterday was my first day back Monday. So that was a rough day, but today felt a little better. And it's new year, got some new year's resolutions we're going to try to implement. Feeling refreshed and ready to go here.
You do new year's resolutions? I mean, I never do them just because I know that I'll never follow up with them. Like I've kind of learned that over the years. I just never do them. I mean, what are some of your new year's resolutions?
Well, I don't traditionally, but this year I had a few that I thought I need to probably take seriously. I mean, like, when I lived in Richmond, I was lucky. I got to play, like, pick up hoops three times a week. I had a great group to play with. Like, I didn't have to run or lift weights or do any of that crap you have to do to, like, motivate yourself to work out. I used to just play pick up hoops, and I was in phenomenal shape. And then we moved to North Carolina, and all that just went away, and I wasn't prepared for it. And I wasn't, you know, I didn't motivate myself to work out and stay in shape. So I'm not necessarily way out of shape right now, but yeah, I've noticed a difference in a year being in North Carolina, and I got to get on the workout train again.
Yeah. Sometimes that's married life too, and just being so busy with everything. So on today's episode, guys, we're going to get into some of your questions from Twitter towards the end of the episode, but we're also going to look at some of the more recent trends with these Charlotte Hornets here. Just to recap so far, in the year of 2020, the Hornets have a 2-1 record, having beaten the Cavaliers and the Mavericks, which was a very impressive road win for the Hornets there. But also in their most recent game, the Hornets lost to the Pistons on Monday night. The Hornets on the season now have a record of 15-24 and are still in ninth place in the East, above the Bulls, above the Pistons, but we are three games behind the Brooklyn Nets, if that's something that you're trying to achieve. Spencer, not sure I really want to talk specifically about these games and kind of break them down on a game-to-game basis, but just talk about some overall trends, especially in the Mavericks game, which was very impressive, but also the Pacers game, which we lost 115-104. I think where I first want to start is Devontae Graham, and noticing that even though he is in a little mini shooting slump, even though he performed a little bit better with the Pacers game on Monday night, he's still impacting the game in other ways here. The last six games for Devonta Graham, I know that seems like an arbitrary number, but I did the last five games prior to the Pacers game, and I realized I needed to include the Pacers game here. So the last six games, his field goal percentage is down 3% at 35%, which is not that great to begin with an overall average for the season, but the three-point percentage is down 9% over the last six games, and he's shooting just 30% from behind the arc. But saying that, he has still affected the game in so many ways. His assists have been up over the last handful of games, and that's really something that's always been there with Devonta Graham. Win or lose, whether we win by 10, lose by 10, whatever it may be, he is making unbelievable passes. Just some of the passes that he makes are just so unreal, and getting others involved. In the Dallas game specifically, he had a two-hand overhand pass in transition to P.J. Washington. The Pacers game, he had a couple of nice passes as well. And even some of the passes that are not recorded as assists, like, you know, you can't just go to NBA.com and look at those assists, that, you know, pull up those videos. You've got to watch these games and just some of the passes that he makes. I made a note of it in the Pacers game. It did not end up in a bucket, but he was driving full speed, made a pocket pass to Cody, and I think Zeller missed a shot or was blocked or whatever. But just some of the ways that he's affecting the game. And when he's off the court, it's very Kemba-like. Like, the difference between him on the court and off the court and just some of the numbers that we have here with Devonta, it's pretty jarring, pretty jarring. So Devonta Graham, even though he's in a mini shooting slump here, and it seems like that hot start that he's had has clearly cooled off a little bit, Devonta is still impacting this Hornets team, Spencer.
Yeah, he is. I mean, you know, I went and looked at some of his advanced numbers earlier in the past 10 games. I think that's a good chunk sample of when teams have really switched up their defensive coverage against him. I mean, his assist percentage is up. His turnovers are down. You know, I just think Devonta is doing a really good job, Richie, of just like taking what the defense is giving him. And, you know, he's a shorter player. He can't make passes over the top like a Luka Doncic, right? When a team's running an extra defender at him. So he does have to make that pocket pass to a rolling Cody Zeller or, you know, whoever it might be, and just keep the offense moving. So, you know, that is something I think he's done a good job of. And Devonta's also not, you know, he's not an explosive athlete. He can't, you know, just run right at the hip of that help defender, that blitzing defender, and get around the corner and make a play that way for himself. You know, he really does have to just take the pass that's available. And I think he's done a nice job of that. But yeah, I mean, his understanding of where people are on the floor is really second to none. You know, he's got some athletic deficiencies and some physical deficiencies that he just can't overcome because he's a shorter, less athletic player. But, you know, he's clearly is like what he's been able to do in terms of efficiency, keeping the offense moving as teams have switched up their coverage on him is really impressive and just speaks to his IQ. And this is something we recognized last year, right? I mean, his turnover numbers are down, his assist numbers are high, is one of the best assist to turnover ratio guy really in the league again this year. And considering how much of a workload he's taken on from last year, it's really impressive. But the shooting numbers, I mean, the last 10, they're concerning. I mean, they really are. You have to shine a light on him. Restricted area, he's under 48%. I mean, in the paint, but not in the restricted area. I mean, he's taken 22, only made four from there. Mid-range, 25%. Corner threes, really hadn't taken that many, only nine over the past 10 games. And then the above-the-break attempts is really where you say, all right, this is where this guy makes a living. Yeah, he's still trying to make a living there. He's still gotten up 92 above-the-break threes in the last 10 games, but only making those at a 33% clip. So, I mean, everything is down, everything across the whole board. And his effective field goal percentage is about 43% over the last 10 as well. So, you know, offensively, it really is a struggle for him to shoot the ball right now. Still getting to the free throw line at the same rate, which has been impressive for him this year. But it's really just Devonta's IQ that's keeping him afloat right now. The one area that he's got to improve in is that mid-range jump shot,
right?
You know, getting to the rim in the paint, learning how to make that floater, learning how to get guys on, you know, in the air, off their feet, going into their bodies, drawing those fouls. So, you know, that middle game is where he's really got to improve because the whole league is clued in on how dangerous he is coming off a pick and roll and taking a pull up three.
It's almost like when he comes off that pick and roll and then teams force him inside the 3-point line and he's weaving and snaking, you know, back and forth. He's not fully confident of himself as to what he wants to do, whether it's getting all the way to the basket, whether it's pulling up for mid range or trying to get to the floater game. One of those things has got to be a plus or an advantage for him, because he can't just be a guy that pulls up from behind the arc, because teams are, as we've seen, are starting to play him a little bit differently. But I think it says a lot about Devontae, and you kind of mentioned this, you know, just his high IQ and just impacting the game, Mavericks game specifically. You know, this team played very, very well in the first half. They held the NBA's top offense to just 44 points at halftime. But they almost blew this game in the third quarter, where the turnovers started to pile up. And I think that's always seems to plague this team. The turnovers, when that goes wrong, this team just goes wrong. You know, they just can't win when they turn the ball over. But anyway, towards the end of the game, like PJ Washington and Devontae Graham and Terry Rozier, you know, it says a lot about them in the clutch time situations to have a lead blown, and he still shows up in clutch time with Devontae Graham. It feels like even if Devontae Graham has an off night shooting, somehow he makes an impact late in the game. And I think we saw that in the Mavericks game.
Yeah, no, I mean, I agree. And look, the Hornets have been one of the better clutch teams in the league, as crazy as that sounds this year. But Devontae Graham is absolutely a player who's not scared of the moment, not scared of the big shot.
Right.
And we've seen that, especially during this struggle, this offensive struggle. I guarantee you, if you went and looked at his fourth quarter numbers, they would tell you a totally different story than what, you know, this overall sample recently has. I mean, he's that kind of guy. So, but, you know, going back to your point about him, you know, coming off that pick and roll, if there's a, you know, a really good on ball, you know, feisty defender, teams will still kind of let that center sit low and just chase Devontae over the screen, knowing he really can't get into his shot. And you're right, when he gets into that middle area where he's got a guy on his hip and he's got the drop defender in front of him, he is a little indecisive. You know, he doesn't want to take that mid-range jump shot. A few games ago, and now I'm not remembering which one it was, in the same quarter, the team defended him the same way. They had the aggressive on-ball defender roll, you know, chase him around ball screen, stay right on his hip, and he was just kind of walking into that mid-range jump shot, hit a few in a row. And I thought, look, if teams are going to give Devontae this because there is an aggressive on-ball defender, he needs to take it more often, because he's got to find more ways to score other than just the above the break, I'm going to walk into this three-point shot. It's just not going to – he's not going to make a career out of that. You know, he's got to learn something else. So, you know, I think it is okay for him to say, hey, if a mid-range jump shot is open, I need to take it.
Yeah, right? I think Borrego stresses the fact that they're trying to eliminate the mid-range. But to me, I'm okay with the occasional pull-up mid-range, especially, like you said, if that's what they give him. You know, I don't fully trust him going to the rim and the floater area either. I feel like I would trust him a little bit more in that pull-up mid-range area, you know, not having to go up against a center or a power forward towards the rim. I mean, wouldn't you say the same?
Yeah, I mean, I think he has things that he can still learn, you know, going to the rim. And we saw Kemba, it was really a struggle for him going to the rim early in his career. And then Kemba learned how to use his body and keep the defender, you know, use his body as almost a defender between him and the rim and get so far under the rim and use his arms to spin that ball from up under, you know, around, you know, off the glass and into the basket. And he drew a lot of fouls that way too. So, you know, if Devontae can learn how to use his body better when he gets into traffic and use defenders' gravity, if you will, against them, you know, I think he can become more efficient in that area. But it's very obvious that there's just not he doesn't have a one move to go to. He doesn't have a well-developed skill set in that area right now. He's just uncomfortable in traffic if there's not an open shooter that he can fling it out to. But look, I mean, if he's got a little bit of breathing room coming off the pick and roll where he can't get into his shot, but he can somewhat survey the floor, he's always going to make the right pass, whether that be to the opposite corner or just swinging it back to the top to hit Miles, who might be, you know, sprinting towards the rim. I mean, he's always going to make the right play. It's just, you know, when it's just making those reads, drop defender hard on ball, you know, on ball guy right on my hip, defenders blitzing me or trapping me. Now, where's the next pass? If it's not just the roll man, DeZeller or Biz, you know, it's learning how to make those reads quicker, because you're right. Right now, he is just a little indecisive with all these different looks that he's been getting.
Regardless, with his shooting slump, the Hornets play way better with him on the court. So even if his numbers dip a little bit, the offense as a whole plays better. They score the ball better. They turn the ball over less. I looked this up. When Devontae is on the court, the Hornets score 17 more points per 100 possessions compared to when he's off the court. Per cleaning the glass, that's in the 100th percentile. So that's just crazy to me. Very Kimba-like numbers. Not saying that Devontae is Kimba, but just the difference between him on the court and off the court and making an impact on the game. Let's transition to Dwayne Bacon. He has played in about 25 minutes or so the last couple of games. He actually was the first off the bench for these past three straight games that we mentioned, Cleveland, Dallas, and the Pacers. I feel like he hasn't been that great. I mean, I feel like he's been solid. He's played with a physicality and shot the ball relatively well from behind the arc. I've kind of cooled off on him in terms of how much he can actually move the needle for this team. But I do think that this is really a confidence booster for Dwayne Bacon. And I feel like James Borrego is using this opportunity to get him some early playing time to boost his confidence. But I will say, you know, this might be coming at the expense of Cody Martin, who received a DNP against Cleveland and played less than a minute against Dallas. You know, I think he brings clearly a little bit more offensively than Martin does, but sometimes just has a tendency to get too zoned in with his own personal game, where Martin feels like he's more of a team player and he can kind of fit in wherever you need him. And you obviously, Martin's going to bring it defensively night in and night out. So what are your thoughts on Bacon and maybe how that's going to affect Cody Martin and his playing time? And I will say that I've been somewhat impressed with Bacon in just terms of how his confidence probably was shot when he had a really, really slow start and now coming in and playing 25-plus minutes a game and playing solid, I will say.
Yeah, I mean, Bacon has had some I think, good moments really in the last four games since he's been getting more consistent playing time. I mean, you know, in the last four, he's pretty much gotten 20 minutes in every game. So, you know, it's clearly a Borrego trying to figure out this lineup still. I mean, the idea of Dwayne Bacon, you know, and we saw it, you know, at the end of last season, being the idea of him being a solid two-way player, you can see it by just watching him move around the court. You know, he's got a good frame at 6'5". You know, he's shown the ability to shoot the ball, though he hasn't really shown it this year. But yeah, we've seen some stretches. Dwayne looks like a guy to me. His confidence, I think, and this happens with young players regularly. His confidence is like the stock market. You know, it's going to go up and down regularly. But the Cleveland game, I think, is the game you have to go to and say, this is really the idea of what he can do. He can be a slasher. You know, when the Hornets really struggle to have a guy that can get to the rim off the bounce, not get knocked off his spot, you know, and if not make it, you know, get to the free throw line. I mean, Dwayne Bacon is the guy you look at on this team that can do that and also create some offense, you know, in spots. But, you know, it just hasn't been consistent enough. And, you know, the outside shot has not been going down. He's not been good from the mid-range. Really the only thing for him, you know, in the short sample we've had this season, because he hasn't played a lot again, is just his ability to get to the rim and create offense for Charlotte there. But, you know, I think he's just one of these players. You know, he's got to get reps, continue to get reps. His confidence has got to continue to go up, and that's only going to go up by getting more playing time. But you also need this for Cody Martin, like, right, to your point. And Cody Martin is a plug-and-play type of guy who – really right now he's the best wing defender on this team. I don't think there's any question about that. Maybe the best defender on the whole team. You know, we saw Borrego come in with Cody Martin in the second half last night to try to put a stop to this TJ Warren hurricane that nobody could do anything with. And he wasn't successful at that, but it's an issue for the coaching staff right now. I mean, I'm sure it is a tough decision to make of do you really want to invest these minutes into Cody Martin, who you just drafted and you've got under contract and got his rights for two more years, you know, or do you want to continue to try to, you know, work Dwayne Bacon into the lineup? And Dwayne Bacon will be a restricted free agent here at the end of the season. So, you know, I think Dwayne will continue to get an opportunity, but I certainly think his leash, as the losses probably start to pile up for Charlotte, is going to be a little shorter, because, you know, the Hornets don't have to make Dwayne part of the future. Cody Martin certainly is.
you see that there's a lot of wings on this Hornets team, and Borrego's trying to fit each of them into the game. And really the only reason I felt like Cody Martin played last night, because there was some shuffling with, you know, Marvin going down and Miles Bridges playing the four, and, you know, the wings just shuffling around a little bit. But I feel like when everyone is healthy, especially as of late, it seems like Bacon has been that guy prior to Cody Martin. And even Batum, you don't see him anymore playing. But I think if I had the option of playing Cody Martin or Dwayne Bacon, even though the Dwayne Bacon adds a little bit more offensively, I think exactly like you said, he's a restricted free agent this year. Cody Martin, I mean, not like tremendously younger, but he is younger. He's in his first year, and he has shown something that the Hornets don't have, and that's the ability to play defense out on the perimeter. While Bacon does have some kind of upside there, he really fully hasn't shown it on the defensive side of the ball.
And too, Richie, you have to consider, you know, Jalen McDaniels he's making some pretty serious steps forward, I think, in Greensboro right now. And he's going to be a part of, if not this season, you know, certainly next season. And so there's another guy you have to find minutes for on top of your first round draft pick. And on top of whoever the Hornets sign with their cap space this summer. So, you know, I think we're certainly at the point in time where we have to scratch our heads and wonder, you know, how much longer will Dwayne Bacon get this opportunity? The clock is ticking for him in Charlotte. And he does. I know he has not gotten a lot of solid, meaningful NBA minutes outside of really those ones at the end of last season, but he's got to start proving something. And at least Borrego is giving him an opportunity here recently. And like I said, I would expect that to continue for, you know, up until the All-Star break at the very least.
Right. Let's transition to PJ Washington. His percentages and his efficiency from the floor really hasn't changed that much since he's come back from injury 6 games ago, but it just seems like I'm seeing a different type of PJ Washington. Again, not necessarily in the difference in stats overall, but just feel like he's had a nice streak where he's played very well, getting more aggressive when getting to the rim, something that's needed out of a player that has surprised some people from behind the arc, and teams are starting to adjust accordingly. On the season, he's averaging 3.5 drives per game. But in the last 6 games, he's doubled that, almost doubled. He is getting 6 drives per game, which is the third highest on the team in that span behind Graham and Rozier. He won't win the Rookie of the Year with Ja Morant. Probably wouldn't even finish runner-up. I think Tyler Hero or Nunn might get that nod there. But he is such a solid player, and he has, at least in my eyes, I know that you were higher on him coming into this draft. He has surprised me and pleasantly surprised me more than I thought he would. And just the variety in his game in terms of playing out of the post, you know, playing the pick-and-pop game. He can handle the ball a little bit, drive the ball a little bit, passing out of the post. All these little things just add up to a very, very solid player on the offensive side. And on the defensive side, he's a very good team defender as well. So, you know, there's not much difference in stats, but I just feel like he's come back from his injury and he's played very, very well. And I know that you were higher on him come draft season, and you really did want PJ Washington on this Hornets roster.
Yeah, I mean, look, he's looked great this year. I mean, certainly better than I thought he would look. I just thought, coming out of college again, I mean, I liked how many more threes he took in his last season at Kentucky. You know, I thought he had some under the radar explosiveness and some under the radar ball skills, you know, which we have seen those this season. I think those have surprised a lot of people. But he's the prototypical modern day NBA four, right? Like he's a good shooter from out the outside. He can shoot him from above the break. He can shoot him from the corners. He can finish with dunks. He can take 2 dribbles, you know, and beat a closeout defender and get to the rim, you know, and finish with authority or get fouled. I mean, you know, he can go off 1 foot, he can go off 2 feet. I mean, he just checks a whole lot of boxes. And then on the other side of the floor, you know, he's still learning the speed of NBA offenses in terms of having to defend NBA offenses. You know, we've seen him miss rotations. We've seen him get overpowered by bigger players. We've seen him, you know, get beat by quicker guards when he switches, but for the most part, he can hold his own, right? Like here, PJ Washington, here's a guy that can probably guard a Kawhi Leonard. He can guard a Paul George, LeBron James, and you don't have to, you know, immediately send help his direction. You can know that he's going to hold his own. And we're talking about that in his rookie season. So you got to imagine that 3 or 4 years down the road, we're going to be talking about a pretty solid defender, not only at his position, but certainly probably going down and defending a position. and going up and being able to guard fives when the Hornets want to go smaller, when he just gets caught on a switch. So he's a really, really solid overall basketball player from A to Z. I mean, you can tell he was brought up the right way. He was taught the game the right way. He didn't skip steps, right? Like, I just watched this guy, and I watched him in college, and that's what I took away. He has not skipped steps in his development. And not to divert another direction here, but it's an easy comparison or lack thereof, I guess, to make. But with Miles Bridges, Richie, we've talked about this. To me, it's very clearly he has skipped steps in his development as a basketball player. His understanding of the game is it's just not there. You know, he can't keep up with the speed, not very skilled, doesn't make great decisions with the ball on the offensive end, and just he can't keep up with the speed of it defensively. So, again, not to, throw poop in Miles' direction here, but just kind of comparing those two players, one very polished to be a rookie, the other in his second year, we're maybe hoping to see that polish player a season from now in his third year. So that's really what I liked about PJ in college, and that's what we've seen so far in the NBA. But look, he has a ways to go on the defensive end. Not to be too positive here. we've done that for PJ for a few months now, but he's definitely got some development to go on the defensive end. But I mean, the Hornets nailed this pick. I don't think there's any question about it. He's going to be an NBA starter for a number of years.
Right. It's a good comparison to make with him and Miles, and obviously a lot of fans were wondering how they would coexist on the court, which, Miles has not played the best this season, but I don't think the issue is him being paired with PJ Washington. But you make a good point of him being a polished player, but he's obviously someone that's a little more boring in the way that you watch him. And then you have Miles Bridges, on the other hand, who, he has to think through the game a little bit more. He's not sound defensively or offensively. There's things that still need to be cleaned up, but he's very athletic and he jumps off the page when you watch him on the screen. Spencer, I didn't really have this in the notes here, but you brought up Terry Rozier today on Twitter and just how he's turned out to be an asset for this team. So I'll let you lead this off here before we get into the Twitter questions. But what are your thoughts on Terry Rozier so far and the progress that he has made and just the hoopla surrounding his contract?
Yeah, I mean, look, if you'll recall, I didn't think the Terry Rozier contract was a win for the Hornets by any stretch of the imagination, but certainly the national narrative was, wow, this is awful. And again, I didn't think it was great, but I didn't think it was awful as it was being made out to be. I mean, Terry Rozier is one of the best catch and shoot. No, he is the best catch and shoot player in the NBA right now in terms of effective field goal percentage for how many attempts he's taking a game. I mean, if you're taking three catch and shoot attempts per game, nobody has a better effective field goal percentage than Terry Rozier in the entire NBA. But I mean, going back to the contract this summer, there were three reasons that I just took the wait and see approach with how this thing was going to work out. It was only a 3-year deal. Okay. It declines over those 3 years. I just thought he hit number two. He had a potential to make a jump in a new role. This was a guy that, yes, the overall numbers, the advanced analytics may be frowned upon to an extent, but here's a guy that almost was one of the more important offensive, really two-way players on a team that almost made the finals, okay, in Boston a few years ago. He was a very important piece to that team, and we saw him make some really big shots in a conference championship series. I mean, that's got to mean something at some point to me. So I thought, okay, here's a guy, take that guy, put him in a new role where he can be one of the main guys on this roster. There's potential for him to take a jump here, okay? And then number three is this contract, Richie, was never really going to interfere with Charlotte's cap space moving forward. I mean, they're going to have $30 million this summer at a minimum to spend and double that a summer later in the summer of 2021. And that's not even counting what trades they could make. I mean, if they could get off a Nicholas Batum contract, which is unlikely, but if they could, or if they were able to trade a Cody Zeller or a Bismack Biyombo at the trade deadline, that becomes even more. So it was just never going to affect really strategically what the Hornets could do with their cap space moving forward. So, for those three reasons, I said, let's just wait and see with Terry. And we went through the initial, oh my God, this guy cannot play point guard. He's not a lead guard.
Yeah, that was like the first 10 games there. Yep.
Yeah, I mean, it was bad. And look, it also took Devontae Graham emerging onto the scene as quick as he did, becoming a lead point guard, allowing Terry to get off the ball. But Terry Rozier, along with all of us, I think noticed really quickly, man, the better position for me, the better opportunity for me is as a second option with the ball in my hands, right? And he bought into that quickly and immediately saw returns. And, you know, I just think that that speaks a lot about him as a player. You know, I think he gets a bad rap sometimes as being maybe, I don't know if selfish is the right word, but, you know, score first, I'm looking for mine. But when you think about the ball was taken out of his hands, was put in Devontae Graham's hands, immediately Terry becomes a better player. And you're not going to do that without mentally making the decision, this is a better chance for me to be successful. Right. And I think he deserves credit for that. So, but look, the numbers speak for themselves. It's not a huge sample size, but we're almost to the All-Star break, and he's the best catch and shoot player in the league right now. So I think there's something to be said for that. And I think that he can become a tradable asset for Charlotte this time next year. I think we can start to have the conversation. You know, if the Hornets are about where they are with their overall record this year, if not a little worse, we'll see that. The Hornets have an asset they can move forward with and help to bring more into the war chest to, you know, with this rebuild. So look, well done for Kupchak. I mean, really, seriously, it was the only thing he could have done to make up for Kemba just leaving town. But this is why you take risk on young players when you're in a cycle of a cap clean cycle and a rebuild cycle. And so far this is paying off.
Yeah. I think when I originally saw the deal, I was so hung up on his individual salary and the production that I thought he would get, I really didn't look at the team salary and factor that too much into my decision as to why I was probably lower on this sign and trade than you were. Like you mentioned, the Hornets books just open up this summer and again next summer as well. And so when you consider that factored into Rozier's salary, maybe he never lives up to that salary, which he probably won't. But in the grand scheme of things, it's not holding the Hornets back in what they want to do. And Spencer laid that out. And yes, since he switched over to the off-guard shooting guard position, since Devontae Graham took over at the point guard, you know, we have seen those catch-and-shoot numbers go up. He's a player that if you put the ball in his hands and he over-dribbles and he thinks too much, that's when things go south. But you get him off ball, and you make that switch in your head, like you said, Spencer, and knowing that you're just going to catch, shoot, make quick decisions, you have seen how effective Rozier can be. And he's actually, especially recently, he's shooting the ball the better around the rim and better in the floater range recently. Yeah. And that's something that he's always struggled with throughout his career.
Well, and two, like I would challenge people to think about it this way too. We don't have to just pray and hope that it becomes a tradable asset. But how about this? How about we have his bird rights after 3 years? If he continues to develop as a player, he's 25 years old. He's still young. If he continues to develop as a player and Devontae Graham continues to develop as a player, that duo, by the way, has been really freaking good this season together. Well, Who's to say that can't be your backcourt of the future? And then you build around them and PJ Washington and say we hit one more draft pick, you know, with a big man. Like, so now you have something cooking. I mean, he doesn't have to be traded. We could re-sign this guy at potentially a reasonable number with his bird rights and continue to build with him when would be his 28-year-old season. So there's options here for Charlotte. And right now, as we sit here speaking, Richie, they're mostly positive. So we should applaud Mitch Kupchak for that.
That's true. Let's get into the Twitter questions. We had a lot of responses, so we're not going to get to all of them. We'll probably have to do an episode one day just strictly on these mailbag questions. So I tried to pick the best ones or ones that were similar and combine them. The first question that we're going to get to is from at Patrick Connor 7, a friend of the show here. Would a Kevin Love trade make any sense for the Hornets? Now, clearly Kevin Love is having some issues with Coach Beilein over in Cleveland. It seems like he is wanting out. To me, the short answer to this question, Patrick Connor, is no. You know, I think he's a fine player, but he's getting paid for three more seasons after this one at about an average of $30 million per season. And I know we just got through talking about the fact that the Hornets books open up after this season, but I just don't want Love to be that player taking up close to about 30% of our salary cap. And he's probably looking for a situation that is dissimilar to Cleveland. And I don't while we may be in a better position than Cleveland right now, I don't think it's all that different in terms of where we are in our stage. So for us, I don't think it makes any sense. And for him, while he might want to change his scenery, I'm not sure Charlotte would be all that much of a better spot for him. So do you see any sense of making a trade for Kevin Love?
I see a deal like this for Charlotte making some sense, like with this, like, you know, consider this free agent class this summer. It's not a strong one. You know, I don't think the Hornets are going to be serious spenders this summer. So would you treat a player, a veteran player on a long-term deal like Kevin Love, trading for him potentially if you're Charlotte, would you treat that kind of as free agency, right? Now, I agree with you, Richie. I don't think Kevin Love is the right guy. I mean, I just don't think power forward is necessarily the right position. When you talk about Miles Bridges, you're not sure what you're going to do with him. Talk about P.J. Washington bursting on the scene, not really sure what you're going to do with him. We don't really know what we have in Jalen McDaniels yet. We might have something there. There's another guy that kind of fits in that position. So just from a position standpoint, I don't think it makes a lot of sense. You mentioned the contract. But again, I did want to point out, you know, with this free agent class, and even in the summer after this one coming, Charlotte's not going to be a suitor for the big time names.
No.
So they should always have their ear close to the ground when it comes to players that become available, veterans that are all stars now or were all stars that can move the needle, that they can and are under contract for a number of years that they can bring in and build around with these young players. I think that's the kind of trade that they could make. Maybe not this season, but potentially next.
And I think maybe if they were in a better position to compete in the Eastern Conference, I think a deal like that would make sense. So, like, if they were a team, I don't know, like OKC, where they're young, they're kind of right there at that 6-7 seed, and they need someone to take them over the hump, I think it would make sense to make a trade for someone like Kevin Love. Another trade question from at Hornets Beard Guy on Twitter, basically asking the same type of question, Andre Drummond, where would he fit into this young lineup, and would it make sense to trade for him? And I will say that maybe a trade for him might make a tiny more sense, but, you know, not by much. I think I'm not really a big fan of Drummond or bringing him into this team. He's got a player option this offseason at $29 million. And if he turns that down, obviously the Hornets would have made this trade for not, or would have to make a competitive offer to bring him back long term. I think age-wise, like the question is insinuating, he's only 26 years old. So age-wise, he kind of fits right there in that time frame. But I think he maybe, like Love, would prefer to go to a place that is in a better position to compete right now. I know I have like a false hope of this, but like I want my center, our next center, and I know these aren't very abundant out there, but like a center like a Bam Adebayo, someone that can run the floors, very athletic, very bouncy.
Would love to have that guy.
Yeah, can handle the ball out of the post, make passes. Like, he can do it all. Like, that's the type of center that I want, and I just don't – clearly, I don't see that in Drummond. And, you know, yeah. kind of like a Cody Zeller, but more athletic and can do a little bit more with the ball in his hands. So what are your thoughts on Andre Drummond?
Well, I, Richie, I agree. I mean, I want nothing to do with Andre Drummond. I don't think he's a winning player. I just don't. I mean, I'm not trying to be a hater here. His numbers are phenomenal, but I think these are a lot of empty calorie numbers this guy puts up. I mean, I think he's a guy that gets a middling team to respectability, gets him maybe into the playoffs over the hump, but I don't think he's a good player on a winning team. And also, why would you trade for him when you could just sign him this summer? I mean, you know, it sounds like he's opting out of his deal. Charlotte's going to have the cap space. If they really want him, don't give up assets now to get him. Just wait till this summer and then go sign him as a free agent. Look, I don't think this is going to happen, not because I don't want him, Richie. I think the Hornets still wake up in the middle of the night with nightmares of Dwight Howard. And Andre Drummond is a player like that. He needs his post touches. Yeah, he can help you on the glass. Yeah, he can block some shots. But, like, I think the Hornets learned their lesson trying to put a guy like Dwight Howard next to Kemba Walker. Like, oh, my God, this does not work. And now that you have a guy like Devontae Graham and Terry Rozier next to him that are really having some offensive success, why would you throw a center that needs the ball all the time in the middle of that to muck up their development? It doesn't make any sense to me, which is exactly why it could happen. But, I don't think so. I'll give you a name, though, to watch. Steven Adams. There's a player who's not under contract long term, but I think Oklahoma City, we'll see. I mean, they're in the playoffs if the season ended today. We'll see what they do. He's got 1 year left next year at about $27.5 million. That's a lot. But, you know, you could trade for him now. If you could get off Biz and, you know, throw something OKC's way, have him for next season. And now you got his bird rights. And, you know, depending on how he looks in the system, he's only 26 years old, believe it or not. You know, there's a guy maybe you could sign him long term to bring along with this young core. That's a trade that makes some sense to me. And he doesn't need the ball, right? He's going to be a rim runner. He's going to set some good screens. He's going to block some shots. I like that as a more feasible trade for Charlotte. And I would keep an eye on that. I think that's a deal they might do.
Yeah, not as bouncy as Bam Adebayo, but I do like him better as a player than Drummond. But I'm not sure OKC parts ways with him. They're right there in the thick of it with the postseason there. But we shall see. Next question. I'm actually combining two people here for this question. What's the plan for Miles Bridges moving forward? And part two of this question, is it the right time to trade him? I'll first say I don't like giving up on players after just 1.5 seasons, even if there are some signs of some kind of worry with this player. You know, I think you need to give a player 3 to 4 years to come into their own. And I've definitely been hard and negative on Miles Bridges, but I am not at the point where I'm like, okay, this is the right time to trade for him. You know, he's been put in a difficult situation this season, having to see the ball a whole lot more. And maybe this just isn't the role for him. You know, the role for him is putting him next to a player that can go get you 18, 20 points a night, and the attention is off of him. He played much, much better with Kemba Walker last season in his rookie year, and you don't want to put the ball in his hands. And we're seeing some of these flaws with his ball handling, creating separation with the ball in his hands. And even obviously on the defensive side, he has that focus issue and processing things at a slow speed. But maybe a couple years down the road where he's moved to the fourth option on a team that has better talent around him, maybe he flourishes in that type of situation. So to me, he's too athletically gifted to even think about trading him, in my opinion. But Spencer, do you have other ideas? I know that we've always been hard on Miles Bridges, and some of the signs of making the jump from year one to year two just hasn't happened.
No, I agree with you. I mean, I'm not giving up on Miles Bridges. I think it's well documented. I think he's got, you know, light years to go in his development and certainly understanding the game and the speed of it. But I think the whole league is still trying to picture what his role is in this league. I think ultimately what probably Charlotte is hoping is that Miles Bridges, you know, they can keep him around, you know, they can get to the end, you know, keep him developing, certainly in the rest of this year, if not all of next year as well, should be really focused on him developing, and then get to the end of his rookie deal, seeing some positive signs. And then maybe he's like maybe he becomes like a Marcus Morris, like super sub type of player, right? Because we've seen some ISO positives from Miles. You know, when he can get a little bit of a smaller defender on him, Hornets have been posting him more this season. I think we've seen some success there. If he gets ahead of steam and he gets to that spin move and he can see the rim, forget it. I mean, he's at least getting to the foul line. So can they tap into that athletic potential, you know, and turn him into a super sub coming off the bench that can give you a little shot in the arm offensively? I think that might be his destiny, his pie in the sky idea as an NBA player, is more of just an ISO type of guy who you can throw the ball to and go get a bucket. He's got a long ways to go to get there, right? I mean, it's just he's not comfortable enough with the ball in his hands. His dribble is not sharp at all. But, man, if he can get ahead of steam and get past that first defender and get a step towards the rim, he is so hard to deal with. So let's clean up this, you know, the parts before that, getting by the defender, getting into a triple threat, you know, having that in and out dribble move, that crossover move to get him, you know, going towards the rim. I think there's something to be had there offensively for Miles. On the other end of the floor, I don't know. I just don't know. I mean, I really don't. I don't know what you do with him right now. He's just so far behind the speed of the game. And the only thing you can do with that, Richie, is just keep trotting him out there and say, this is what you're focusing on. Talk on defense. I've said this before. Talk on defense, Miles. Move your feet. Slide. Don't stand up. You know, he's just got to keep getting reps. Eventually, you're hoping that it sticks, but no signs so far.
Yeah, I don't really have a conspiracy theory like you always have, but I feel like Borrego wants to put him on a opposing player that sees the ball a little bit more often, like the first or second option, and put him on that wing that controls the ball a little bit more, so you're not having to see him off ball. I know that on ball he's not great by any means, but off ball, especially when he's down near the basket, clearly he's going to be giving up wide open backdoor cuts, and that's something that you just can't defend against. So that's just kind of my conspiracy theory there.
Yeah, or when he has to chase, right? Like off the ball, making a rotation, he's not good at it. Or when he has to chase a player, like McDermott last night, he got stuck on him. I guess it was just, you know, Hornets running back on defense. They get mismatched, matching up, and he gets stuck on McDermott. McDermott comes off a pin down screen, and Zeller sees it happening before McDermott gets the ball and just sprints to McDermott because he can see how far behind Miles is, chasing him. And then Turner just rolls wide open to the rim, and PJ can't slide over in time. So, you know, it's just that kind of stuff. He's just responsible for so many defensive breakdowns, whether it be chasing somebody off the screen, guarding the basketball, making a rotation. So that's why I say, I just don't know where you put him right now. I agree with you, Richie, though. I think he's better suited to go against a stronger wing where he can just physically hold his own, right, instead of having to think through all this other action.
All right, let's get to these last two questions fairly quickly. I'll let you lead this one off. From Price Financial on Twitter, is Marvin's mentoring more valuable than a second-round pick or multiple second-round picks or maybe even late first-round pick? Do we think that his mentoring somehow overshadows those picks?
I think that's a really good question. You know, and it's one that you, myself, and BG have talked about on the podcast. I could go either way. I mean, I'm always probably going to part with, you know, get the assets for the guy if you can, even if it's a good second round pick or just a decent second round pick and another late one, like get something, just get another bite at the apple. But, you know, I mean, you're not going to find a better locker room guy in the league other than Marvin Williams. And the Hornets are one of the youngest rosters in terms of guys that actually play in the league. So, it's a great question. I could go either way. I'm going to have to say I don't really have an answer here.
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough. I think it also depends on where the team is. I think I'm going to keep going back to OKC, like a team that's maybe ready for some playoff experience, a team that is maybe better suited to play some of their younger players mixed in with their veteran players and still be able to compete, kind of like Chris Paul is mentoring Schroeder and SGA with the Thunder. I think maybe if this team was a little bit farther along in their process and not as delayed, I think, yes, his mentoring is valuable and spending time on the court and off the court with Miles and in PJ. I think, but right now, with his contract expiring, as much as I love Marvin's role on this team, I think you can't pass up any kind of asset that you might get with a trade. So last question here, Spencer, at Austin Daisy 11. Favorite Hornets moment of all time. So I'm going to start this one off just because I don't really have an answer, like you didn't have an answer to the previous one. I'm not sure I can really pinpoint one moment, my favorite moment for the Hornets all time. I'm much more of a like a team success type of guy where, you know, I don't really care too much about the individual success. So like those late 90s teams, the early 2000s teams were my favorite moments as a fan. I don't know if you remember the series against the Bucks where it was very similar to the Heat a handful of years ago where they had won game 5 on the road and then game 6 they came back home and they had a chance to wrap up the series. This was the Milwaukee team that had Sam Cassell and Ray Allen. This was the closest the franchise has ever been to the Eastern Conference Finals, and I was in attendance at the Coliseum for game 6 of the Eastern Conference Semifinals against the Milwaukee Bucks. They obviously ended up losing that game and game 7 back in Milwaukee, but just the atmosphere that the Hornets Coliseum used to bring is something that I wish younger fans would get to experience in years to come. So I don't really have one moment that I can pinpoint, but just the team success that this Hornets team brought in the late 90s was something that I will always look back on.
Yeah, I mean, you can't beat those moments at the Coliseum, right? I mean, I grew up going to games too. You know, I'm only 31, so like I remember the series vaguely that you're talking about, Richie. It was probably certainly one of the biggest milestone moments for the franchise, but I don't have like real clear memory of moments, shots made, blocks made, defense, whatever, you know, from that series. The one that I can think of, and really I'm just going to go from like year 2000 moving forward, is probably the Courtney Lee shot in Miami, knocking down the three. You know, Kimba takes the three, I think, coming off a ball screen from Zeller. It's way short, and so it takes a long rebound bounce right to Courtney Lee at the top of the key, and he knocks down a huge three, which is a dagger to win the game in Miami. Charlotte had that was game five. Charlotte was coming back to Charlotte to win game six. Up 3-2. I just knew 48-win season, going to beat Miami in the first round. This is really a turning moment for Kemba Walker, you know, Al Jefferson, Nick Batum. It was Batum's first year. You know, guys, this is all coming together, right? Like, we can see how this is going to be a good thing for like 3 or 4 years. And of course, the Hornets lose the next two, and really nothing has gone right other than Kemba Walker having ridiculous years since then. But that's the one moment where I really thought this team was about to take the next step.
Yeah. Very similar moments. I think, the only reason I remembered that game per se, because I was in attendance, and Spencer's acting like I'm older than him, but we're both 31 years old. So it's not that I have a better memory.
I never said that.
I thought you were alluding to it. I'm only 31. Maybe you have a better, you know, a more long withstanding memory here. But it was actually, do you remember the year where like the Hornets broke out like the headbands? Like that was a thing where,
like, the Baron Davis group. Oh yeah,
that was the year, or at least the years. And I think they passed out headbands during that playoff game, and all the fans looked like little dorks wearing those headbands.
That was the atmosphere. Davis, David Wesley, was Bobby Phils on those teams? I think he was, right? Or was that?
It might have been after his passing at that point.
Maybe that was after Bobby. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but that's the atmosphere I strive for. Obviously, the product on the court has got to improve, and that could have been a turning point. Like you said, the Courtney Lee shot and winning in game six at home, and obviously it did not come to fruition there. Very similar moments there, you and I, in terms of winning game five on the road and having the chance to win game six at home to wrap it up. Here's a rundown of the next couple of games for the Hornets. The schedule gets a little hectic before this game in Paris. I think, is it Paris? Or I know it's France, but is it Paris? Do we know?
I think it is Paris. Okay. I'm 99% sure it is, yeah.
Yeah, I just assumed it was Paris, but it very well could not be. But the Hornets will play Toronto, and then they go on a four-game West Coast trip with games against Utah on Friday, Phoenix on Sunday, Portland on Monday, and then to wrap it, they play the Denver Nuggets in a week's time. So thanks again for tuning in to another Buzz Beat. As always, we'd appreciate a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts. For Spencer, I am Richie. We will see you guys next time.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. In hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.